Good morning.
Oh, no. No problem.
Okay, we're ready?
Yep.
Go ahead and call the committee to order. The clerk will take the roll.
Vice Chair Keenan.
Present.
Representative Beattie.
Here.
Representative Binkley.
Excused. She was.
Here. Vice Chair Cafaro. Oh, there she is.
Excuse. Here.
Vice Chair Cafaro.
Excuse.
Representative Kirk-Carpenter.
I'm here.
Oh. Representative Falk.
Here.
Representative Fitzpatrick.
Here.
Representative Gillette.
Excused.
Representative Hamilton.
Here.
Representative Hastings.
Here.
Representative Hillegard.
Excused.
Representative Hopkins.
Excused.
Representative Keough.
Here.
Representative Mercer.
Here.
Representative Moore.
Here.
Representative Knave.
Here.
Representative Stuart Paraguay.
Here.
Representative Reed.
Here.
Excuse me. Representative Regeer.
Excused.
Representative Schillinger.
Here.
Representative Tuss.
Here.
Representative Windy Boy.
Excuse.
Chair Jones.
Here. We have a quorum present, so we can do business. We have six bill hearings and a number of executive actions, potentially on the bill hearings themselves as well as other bills. Representative Gillette is also here. She just walked in. And so, as is Representative Regeer, who just walked in. So we'll begin our bill hearings with House Bill 136. Representative Bertolio.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm here from House District 75, Marta Bertolio, spelled B-E-R-T-O-G-L-I-O. And I happily start your day off with saving you money. This is House Bill 136, which you heard on the floor yesterday, in which it has to do with unclaimed property, and it requires the sale of the securities in remittance to the state. And by doing so, this is going to save money because the state currently pays a security company over $87,000 per year to manage the stocks that the state holds in trust. And I have representatives from the Department of Revenue to also talk about the fiscal note. Thank you.
Okay, are there proponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Derek Bell, B-E-L-L. I'm the Montana Department of Revenue's Division Administrator for its Business and Income Tax Division here in support of House Bill 136. Again, we appreciate Representative Bertolio's patience with us as we work through this bill. It looks like you have a full docket, and so I'll just say that Ms. Morano is here to talk about the fiscal effects of this legislation. I'm happy to stand for any questions you may have contextually about what unclaimed property is and what it does. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Additional proponents.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Tracy Morano. That's M-O-R-A-N-O. And I am the operations director at the Department of Revenue. And I would also like to express my appreciation to Representative Bertolio for carrying this bill for the department. So this bill is a revision of unclaimed property statute that currently exists. And I'm going to speak specifically to sections 4 through 6, which deal with the financial pieces of the bill. So sections 4 and 5 would require the holder to sell unclaimed securities in virtual currency before remitting those funds to the state. The state currently pays a security company, as the representative mentioned, to manage the stocks that the state holds in trust. If we require the sale of the securities prior to that remittance to the state, we would eventually, as a state, see a savings of over $87,000 per year. Section 6 of this bill removes the requirement that the department publish in county newspapers a list of unclaimed property that's received in the last year by November 30th of the next year. It's important to note that this list that occurs in the papers only contains the property received in the last year and therefore does not reflect the complete list of property that the state holds in trust. So I would like to give you an example of that. So let's say that in 2020, a holder reported that I had unclaimed property stock, or unclaimed stock, excuse me, with AT&T. but no unclaimed property was reported to the state in my name in 2022. My name would not appear in the 2022 newspaper insert. So by simply looking at that insert and the names on there, I would not know about the stock that was remitted to the state in 2020. In addition to removing the newspaper listing requirement, Section 6 adds language to require the department to maintain an easily accessible, searchable website of all the unclaimed property that it currently holds in trust. Because the department would no longer be required to publish the properties list, we could direct approximately $15,000 per year spent in insert printing costs to pay for more frequent advertising in the local newspapers. These advertisements would direct citizens to our searchable website. This savings would also give the department more flexibility in advertising by allowing us to use some of the funds saved on printing costs to utilize other advertising methods such as social media campaigns. All advertising would have an option to call the department for those citizens who do not have internet access. So I thank you for your consideration, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, additional proponents. Proponents online, there is one attendee. Are you a proponent on this bill? Nope, he's not for this bill. Are there opponents? Opponents online, not for this bill. Informational.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and Committee. I am Jason Lay, L-A-Y. I am the Miscellaneous Taxes Unit Manager with the Montana Department of Revenue. We handle the administration and compliance for unclaimed property. I'm available for questions if you have any. Thank you.
Okay, additional informational. Seeing none, question from the committee with the note we have six bills and possible 11 executive actions. Vice Chair Keenan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Morano, please. And I'll be as quick as I can. Page six, line 19, virtual currency. I spotted that in the bill when it was on the floor. I voted against the bill just because of that. I don't understand what that's all about. I don't know if there's a federal designation. Are we and other states going to define virtual currency for some reason or not? With what's been in the news the last couple of months, that just made me real nervous. I don't know what we're doing there. Thank you.
Sure. Chair Jones, Vice Chair, I would appreciate if I could redirect that question about virtual currency to Mr. Bell.
Redirect Mr. Bell.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, the definition of virtual currency is derived from the Revised Uniform Unclaimed Property Act, or RUPA. So I'll stick with not RUPA, but the revised act that was promulgated back in 2016. And the reason why the Uniform Law Commission adopted the definition of virtual currency is because that type of unclaimed property didn't exist back in 1995 when it promulgated the initial Unclaimed Property Act, and this legislature passed it in 1997. And so what the Uniform Law Commission did in the interim from in 2015 and 16 was take a look at its Uniform Act and realize that the economy has changed quite a bit since 1995. So the Uniform Law Commission came up with this definition of virtual currency that we're asking, that we think is an important addition to our statute, because we're seeing holders of this type of property out there, and to give them some instruction on what virtual currency means and what their obligations are when they remit those funds to the state. Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you.
Additional questions on this bill? Seeing none, if the sponsor would like to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I appreciate a good hearing and ask for a due pass on this.
Thank you. That closes the hearing on House Bill 136. We are on to House Bill 349. Is Representative Galloway in the House? Okay. Do we have the Representative Buckley? We are now on House Bill 457.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, Alice Buckley, B-U-C-K-L-E-Y, out of House District 63 in Bozeman. Today I bring before the Appropriations Committee House Bill 457. This is a bill we heard yesterday on the House floor. Just to remind all of you, it criminalizes date rape drugs, the act of knowingly or purposely providing someone with a drug. I'll spend most of my time today just focusing on my rebuttal to the fiscal note. As you'll see, the fiscal note lists one of the drugs. So I'll back up. Originally, before the Judiciary Committee amended this, I started off with three drugs. So those are the three most commonly utilized drugs for roofing someone, rohypnol, flunitrazolam, and then GHB. The Judiciary Committee added any mind-altering substance, understanding that there are a lot of different methods for roofing someone, and the intention there is to alter someone's consciousness. The fiscal note focuses on flunitrazolam and says that the Department of Justice does not currently test for that. And it assumes that the Department of Justice would test every sexual assault case in Montana per year for this drug. My rebuttal focuses on the fact that this bill is not intended to address sexual assault. Perhaps there is an overlap where someone is roofied and is sexually assaulted, but we have a current process for that at the moment. This bill is designed to capture the criminal act of someone giving someone else a roofie drug, but then not necessarily sexually assaulting them. And that comes from the stories I heard in Bozeman from women who are actively protecting each other, who have each other's backs, who might still be getting roofied in bars downtown, but are not necessarily going out and getting sexually assaulted. They're just ending up in the hospital, or they're ending up on someone's couch. So it's a little bit nuanced, but I think the assumptions in here are flawed, because I don't intend, the legislative intent is not for the Department of Justice to be testing every single sexual assault case. Maybe there are some. Furthermore, with the addition that the Judiciary Committee added in, so any mind-altering substance, this just widens it up beyond flunitrazolam. So it seems like the fiscal note doesn't match the bill as written. The last thing I'll say is that what we heard in terms of testimony in the Judiciary Committee is that the Department of Justice is not the one who's paying for every single one of these tests. In Gallatin County, where I've had the most exposure to this challenge, Gallatin County is actually the one that's paying for these toxicology reports. So again, I think there's a flawed assumption that the DOJ is paying for every one of these. A little nuanced. I'm happy to answer any questions and just really appreciate you all taking a good hard look at this. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Proponents to the fiscal note? Are there proponents? Proponents online, Travis.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Travis Spinder, S-P-I-N-D-E-R. I stand as a proponent for this bill, and I can speak to anything that involves the Forensic Science Division. I can particularly speak to how we came up with that fiscal note.
Okay, thank you. Are there opponents? Opponents online. Informational witnesses. Okay, questions from the committee. Representative Mercer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For Mr. Spinder, please. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Spinder, I don't understand how you calculated that there would be 300 cases in which you would need to run this additional test at a cost of $300 per test. Can you explain that?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative Mercer, we base that upon the number of sexual assault kits that we receive in the laboratory that also come with the toxicology test that involved with it, and we only base that off of the one drug, flunitrazolam. That is a very novel drug. There's only a handful of laboratories that can actually test for that, and there's no documented reports of that drug showing up in 2021 or 2022. If that specific drug were removed from the bill, we would not have a fiscal note, because we cannot test for that. So with it stating in there, we're under the assumption that we need to test for that. and there's only a handful of labs, so we would have to send that out to be tested at a cost of $300 per test. That's how we came up with the note. Now, if you look at the flunitrazol LAM, there's also flunitrazol PAM, just the difference of LAM and PAM. The flunitrazol PAM is actually Rufinol. So I'm not sure if there's a confusion with that, but we just never, there's hardly any labs that can test for the flunitrazol LAM, and we are not able to test for it, so we would have to send that out to be tested for. If that were removed, we would not have a fiscal note.
Follow, Mr. Chairman.
Follow up.
I guess I'm going down a little bit of a different road here. I'm persuaded by the sponsor's comment that because a person reports to law enforcement that they've been a sexual assault victim, I don't think it follows that it would be appropriate in each one of those investigations to do this test. It seems like this is a narrower subset where sexual assault may or may not be at play. I'm not so sure the denominator of how many sexual assault cases have been investigated where you have you've got a kit that you're evaluating, whether that's the right number in order to come up with the number of tests that you might actually have to run.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mercer, that was, I'm trying to figure out how to answer that one. In terms of whenever we get a sexual assault kit that contains a toxicology sample, that toxicology sample was administered by the law enforcement agency to check and make sure that there, whether or not there was alcohol or any drugs on board. So we're under the assumption with this bill that we would have to test for that in those particular cases.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Spender. I've got a question for the sponsor, if I may, Mr. Chairman.
For the sponsor.
Representative.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Buckley, would you have an objection if we struck the language that the Judiciary Committee put in? I don't want to imperil the bill, but that language about or a mind-altering substance, including prescription medication or another drug, seems like it is taking your bill in a direction that maybe you didn't intend.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I would be in strong support of striking that language. We tried to walk the line between capturing all of the substances that someone might use to perpetrate a date rape crime, but also, as you can see here, mind-altering substance is not defined in code. That would include coffee. That would include anything you would use to alter. We originally had not used alcohol because we didn't want to capture someone spiking the punch. So I would be in strong support of that. I also would be in support, if it would be helpful to this committee, of striking flunitrazolam. Again, we are just trying to have a starting point and capture some of the drugs that are used here, but want to make it as solid as possible. And I think the way it's written at the moment is a little bit concerning in terms of the scope and the lack of definition for mind-altering substance. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative.
So I guess, Mr. Chairman, I wonder if Ms. Johnson can prep an amendment for us striking the language or a mind-altering substance, including prescription medication or another drug, or if we could just do a conceptual on a quick executive action.
We were just working on that conversation at this end, as we're saying, and we were just texting her, but I see she popped up. Ms. Johnson?
Yes, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my question, I guess, would be, I understand we'd strike or a mind-altering substance, including prescriptive medication or other drug. Would we also strike or not the flunitrazolam?
I mean, I'm comfortable leaving that in. I think maybe when the bill gets over to the Senate, the sponsor could try to give some guidance that you don't anticipate that this is going to be an appropriate test for every sexual assault. And I think that'll drive the cost down. But I'm loath to start down that road. I'd like to just take it back to the way the sponsor introduced it, Ms. Johnson.
Okay, I'll start working on it.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Additional discussion from the committee. Seeing none, if the sponsor would like to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee. And I imagine we're all on the same page there. I think line 20 is the most important line without the individual's consent, because otherwise GHB is used occasionally in for medical purposes. So without the individual's consent is really important, so we're not capturing the healthcare industry. Thank you so much for a thoughtful hearing and for bearing with me in terms of the nuance of this. Again, it's really designed not to capture every single sexual assault case, but to say when we are giving someone drugs to alter their consciousness with a malicious intent, that is an assault on our autonomy and our bodies. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks all.
Thank you. That closes the hearing, and we are on House Bill 463. Representative Sullivan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm here about House Bill 463, which is, Katie Sullivan, S-U-L-L-I-V-A-N, out of House District 89, Missoula area. This is an act establishing reporting requirements for food procured by governmental bodies. As I said on the floor, a large amendment went on in the House, and so the fiscal note that you have is as introduced. And there are, I know I have informational witness here from the department that can speak to, I would just encourage you to ask questions about the changes in the fiscal note based off of the amendment that went on. Essentially, the amendment that went on, which you'll see large strikes all over page 3, leading onto page 4, where there's a lot of underline in all caps, what we have done is had instead of having the department having to collect a lot of data about the food procured that are from Montana producers, we have instead had contracts that are valued at $100,000 or more, and we're having those contractors give that information to the department. And so instead of having the burden of data collection being on the department, the burden of data collection is on the vendor. And I have been told that at $100,000 or more, receiving information about which of those products are from Montana is not an unreasonable ask. And so what we're learning here is what we are spending money on that is produced in Montana as we procure food, the goal being to over time learn how we can incentivize and increase spending of taxpayer money on in-state businesses that produce food rather than out-of-state business. So I will sit down. Mr. Chair, thank you.
Okay, are there proponents to the bill and mostly to the fiscal note?
Good morning, Chair Jones and members of the committee. My name is Jasmine Krotkov. That's spelled K-R-O-T-K-O-V. And I am here representing Montana Farmers Union. And Montana Farmers Union promotes resilient regional food systems and diverse markets. So the fiscal note as is being redrafted is very important to us. We were so pleased to see that the original fiscal note, which was a little alarming, is not the one that's going to be attached to this bill. Our organization took root as homesteaders arrived and farmers and ranchers discovered the necessity of getting together in one common cause. We believe that the desire for a profitable market for our products on the farm and ranch could best be accomplished by real competition. So House Bill 463 provides that opportunity for state and agricultural producers to cooperate both in developing markets for our goods and providing fresh, nutritious foods for schools and other institutions that the state procures food for. House Bill 463 is an investment, seed money, if you will, into local economies. Even if the original fiscal note, which was not calculated according to the amended version of the bill, were correct, even if that fiscal note were being used, it would still seem like a sound investment to us. We're gratified to know about the lower cost, which will make this bill an even more sound investment. So please consider that and pass House Bill 463. Thank you.
Additional proponents.
Good Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Katjana Stutzer. It's K-A-T-J-A-N-A-S-T-U-T-Z-E-R. I'm here on behalf of the Montana Brewers Association, and we know that local beer is value-added product made in Montana with a Montana-grown malt and hops oftentimes, and we just feel that this bill would give us better data on the food and beverage procurements by the state. It's a great investment to help us have the data to inform future decision-making in the industry. So thank you.
Additional proponents. Proponents online. Are there opponents? Opponents online. Informational witnesses.
Hi, good morning, Chair Jones, members of the committee. My name is Megan Homeland, H-O-L-M-L-U-N-D. I'm the state's chief procurement officer with the Department of Administration, and I am here to answer any questions you have regarding the fiscal note. Thank you.
Additional informational. Questions from the committee. Representative Hamilton.
Which one?
The one, the Representative Hamilton, senior, the one that asked more questions.
Much senior.
Mr. Chair, question for Ms. Kratkoff.
Ms. Kratkoff.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hamilton, senior.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Kratkoff, you planted a seed in my mind of a question, and the question really is, I'm wondering if we institute this policy, is there any kind of estimate of the number of farmers who would benefit from this in Montana that previously maybe didn't have access to the process?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hamilton, we do not have an estimate of how many farmers would benefit from this. We're hoping that the data that is collected will help us to get that, to figure that out, and to promote to Montana farmers, to strengthen that pipeline between Montana farmers and state procurement.
Thank you. Follow up with another one.
Follow up.
Mr. Chair, and I'm sorry, I missed DOR's representative's name. DOA, was it? I'm sorry.
DOA.
Whoever wrote the fiscal note, that's what I'm interested in.
Chair Jones, representative.
And tell me your name again.
Megan Homeland.
Homeland, okay. Sorry about that.
No problem.
So my question, Mr. Chair, Ms. Homeland, is if you could sort of give us an informal look at what you think the next fiscal note might be and why it changes. And
sure. Chair Jones, Representative. So this fiscal note was prepared on the bill as originally written, and as originally written, it didn't have any kind of threshold in it. So it would have applied to any food or beverages purchased by the state. So that would include, you know, maybe the coffee and water back at the back of the room, you know, anything that anybody would be out on a per diem traveling and they purchase a meal on their pro card. So they would have to come back with that receipt, and an accounting tech would have to look at it and try to distinguish whether or not that's a Montana-made product or not. And as you can see, that would get very difficult and tedious. So that was the majority of the fiscal note, was related to needing an accounting tech, at least for the Department of Administration portion of the fiscal note, to assist with reviewing those, making sure they're coded accurately, establishing all of the counts necessary to track it, and then compiling and reporting annually to the committees as required by the bill. With the revision in the amendment, as the Representative Sullivan mentioned, we worked together to amend it to put in a threshold of $100,000 or greater, so it would kind of eliminate all of that administrative burden. And then we would flip the reporting requirement onto the vendors. I did reach out to one of our larger food vendors that we contract with, and they seem to think that this would not be an issue on their end to be able to report the, you know, origin of the food that we're buying. So just, would you like me to expand? Does that answer your question?
Mr. Chair and Ms. Holmland, that helps a lot. So I assume that's, you know, you're explaining the DOA part of it, but then there's a transfers to MUS that appears to also be people related to tracking and analyzing and so forth. Can you expand on that piece?
Yeah, Chair Jones, Representative. So the university system is one of the largest that buys food throughout the state. And so they, I believe, under their fiscal note had proposed like 4 FTE or something. So it would be related to just gathering all of their information, compiling that, and including that in the report as well.
Follow-up. Mr. Chair and Ms. Holmland, then how much would you, unfair to ask, I suppose, but how much would you expect that might drop with the threshold that's been instituted?
Chair Jones, Representative, my feeling would be that the fiscal note would be fairly minimal across the board, because it would all come in centrally to our office through the vendors. We have about 12 contracts right now that are above the $100,000 amount. It would just be a matter of compiling that into a report and presenting it to the two committees as required each year. So I don't foresee there being a big heavy lift on this. So with an updated fiscal note, I imagine, at least from Department of Administration's perspective, it would be very minimal, if not zero.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay. Additional questions? Representative Mercer.
For Ms. Holmland, Mr. Chairman.
Chair Jones, Representative Mercer.
Ms. Holmland, I'm really confused by a number of things in the fiscal note. There's a reference to local government. And it seems like if we're doing this in 18.2, that there wouldn't, 18.4, that there wouldn't be any reach to local government at all. Am I right about that or wrong about that?
Chair Jones, Representative Mercer. So it does say reporting by a governmental body, which is defined in 18.4.123.11. As meaning a department, commission, council, board, bureau, committee, institution, legislative body, agency, government, corporation, or other entity, instrumentality, or official of the executive, legislative, or judicial branch of the state, including the Board of Regents and the Montana University System. So if it falls within that definition, it would include local governments.
Follow, Mr. Chairman.
Representative.
Follow up.
How many, Mr. Chairman, Ms. Holmland, how many local governments have contracts in excess of $100,000 with any food vendor, as that term is defined on the bottom of page 4 and bottom of page 5?
Chair Jones, Representative, I don't have that information. I could reach out to MACO and see if that's something that they have and provide that to the committee if it's available.
All right. Follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Follow up.
How many state entities other than the university system have contracts with food vendors in excess of $100,000, as that is defined on pages 4 and 5?
Chair Jones, Representative, we have the university system, the Department of Corrections, the Department of Military Affairs, and the Department of Natural Resource and Conservation.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Follow up.
If the fiscal note talks about wondering whether alcohol is covered and whether that would have an impact on the Department of Revenue. If we got rid of alcohol, would there be any reason why we would get anything from the Department of Revenue pursuant to this bill?
Chair Jones, Representative Mercer, I don't believe so, because I believe their contracts would be exempt as under the amendment. They wouldn't have to remit anything unless it's over $100,000, and I'm not aware of any contracts they have for that.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Kirk Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is for Ms. Holmland. Where can I find the two reports that are being contemplated in the bill?
Chair Jones, Representative, there are no reports
or
currently.
Where will I be able to find them?
So the bill is proposing that the reports would be presented to legislative committees. I believe the Economic Affairs Interim Committee and Department of... Sorry, it's in the bill. Let me look real quick. Yeah, State Administration and Economic Affairs Interim Committee.
Great, thank you.
Good luck.
Additional questions, Representative Fitzpatrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question from Ms. Holman. I want to be clear about your procurement responsibilities. Do you handle food procurement for the Department of Corrections and DPPHS for Warm Springs and the other institutions?
Chair Jones, Representative, so we have a statutory authority to either procure or provide oversight of procurement for all goods and services for the state, so we do oversee their procurements. We do, however, delegate authority to agencies at certain levels, so the Department of Corrections has a delegated procurement authority up to $200,000 before they have to come through our office. So they do some solicitations and contracting themselves for those facilities, and then the larger ones do come through our office.
Follow up. You say 200,000, is that per vendor or is that per year?
Chair Jones, Representative, that's total contract value, so that would be the value of the contract, including any options to renew.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Mercer.
One more for Ms. Holman, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Ms. Holmland, I see that we're defining food on page 5, and we are defining it as articles normally used by humans as food or drink, including alcoholic and non-alcoholic beverages. Have we ever defined alcohol as food before?
Chair Jones, Representative, I am not aware of that.
All right.
Sorry, I can't answer that.
Okay. Additional questions? Seeing none, if the sponsor would like to close, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. That was a very interesting hearing, and I appreciate all the information and questions asked. I did want to talk quickly about the Department of Revenue. The reason we did exclude them in the amendment is that they are procuring or buying alcohol, liquor from distillers. That is their job, to have that then go to the liquor warehouse. And so we don't need, as part of this bill, to have status reports on the purchases that are going into and out of the liquor state liquor warehouse. That is something we can already find. And that is something you can already request. Just wanted to clear that portion up. And then the definition of food, the definition of this bill, it was inclusive of alcohol because we want to make sure that alcoholic beverages are included when we talk about Montana-produced food. And so produced means planted, cultivated, grown, harvested, raised, collected, processed, manufactured. That was already in code for the Department of Administration. That is nothing new. And food, for the purposes of this section, which the department had me put into a new section, Section 2, was inclusive of alcohol, so we know how much we're procuring when we are reporting on this bill. And so thank you for the great hearing. I recommend to do pass, Mr. Chair. Thanks.
Okay, that closes the hearing. And Ms. Sullivan, Representative Sullivan, the updated fiscal note is not yet requested. Now, I believe that leadership has been blocking some fiscal note requests till after transmittal to try and not plug the system.
Sure.
But I was trying to see where your fiscal note update was, and the deputy budget director had indicated not yet requested it. Could be being blocked, but it's worth you checking into that.
Sounds good. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
That closes the hearing, and I see Representative Mitchell is in the room, so you are up, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the House Appropriations Committee. So this is the digital ID bill from yesterday, House Bill 519. Got some good news. Looks like we can get that fiscal note completely scratched after talking with the MVD, and maybe we'll have her elaborate on that. So thank you.
Okay. Are there proponents?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Lori Bakri, B as in boy, A-K-R-I. I'm the MVD administrator. I bring you good news today. Thank you for the opportunity to clarify the fiscal note. The cost for the digital driver's license can be funded through our support and maintenance contract. So we pay support and maintenance, and we choose our initiatives that we want to use that money for. It's $2.5 million a year that we pay. We'll have several things, new legislation that comes out in 2025, but we can use that money to pay for the digital driver's license.
Okay. Additional proponents? Proponents online. Are there opponents? Opponents online. Informational. Informational online. With that, questions from the committee. Representative Mercer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for Ms. Bakri. So, Ms. Chairman, Ms. Bakri, now, we've had a lot of conversations about cars and about this this maintenance account, and I guess if you're saying we can wipe out the fiscal note because we're going to absorb whatever costs we're going to incur from the maintenance account, I'd still be interested to know what that's going to be, because that means there's money that won't be available in the maintenance account for the purposes that we thought we were establishing the maintenance account appropriation for.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mercer, thank you for the question. I think we will align our priorities as we get closer to maintenance. You know, certainly if there are issues with the system that need to be handled, then we would have to deal with those. But I think we can spread those over several years, so we will be able to manage the priorities when they come up of what that money is going to be spent for.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Follow up.
So I guess... Let me try to follow up on that, if I can find that fiscal note. So there was a big number in the first year. What's the number in this bill?
519.
There's a huge number in the first year, the $700,660 that you had estimated it was going to cost to do this in year one. And so I now think I understand that you're saying you can spread costs over the life of the contract, but I think it still begs the question, is this what it would cost to do the mobile application regardless of how those costs are incurred?
Mr. Chair and Representative, that is the estimated cost to implement a digital driver's license. And I think there was a range of $450,000 to $700,000 that FAST estimated at this point what it might cost. So that's the one-time fee to get it implemented.
So, follow up, Mr. Chairman. So I guess I'm trying to figure out if are you saying that essentially would be spread out over all of the years in the fiscal note in an uneven way, or would it be for a longer period of time? If we're just trying to figure out what is going to be incurred from that maintenance account, I'm just trying to get a sense of, there's going to be a cost. You're going to be using dollars to do this that you would otherwise have available to do something else under the maintenance contract. So when are we going to incur the costs and in what years?
Mr. Chair and Representative Mercer, we wouldn't start increasing or incurring costs for the digital driver's license until we started implementing, and that wouldn't be until 2025. So when we get closer to 2025, which seems like a long time away, but it really is not, we'll then set our priorities and set a plan for how that money will be spent.
All right, follow up, Mr. Chairman. So does that mean that the $700,660 shifts into FY25 because you would be paying some sort of an upfront cost with the vendor in order to start that, or would it be some in FY25 and then some spread over the remaining out years?
Mr. Chair and Representative Mercer, we have the ability to spread it out over, you know, the years of implementation. I don't know exactly what that might be, but we can certainly spread it out over the time that it takes us to implement the system. there would be an upfront cost, just like the contract there is with FAST now. We have milestone payments. That's what we would have for the digital driver's license as well.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Ms. Bacher.
Representative Caffaro.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I have a question for, could you please remind me of your name?
Ms. Bacher.
Bacher?
Mm-hmm.
Ms. Bacher. Mr. Chairman, Ms. Bacher, on the fiscal note, in assumption number one, it is assumed that Motor Vehicle Division will initially need the credentialing and registration system, CARS, programmed to issue the digital driver's license. Estimated quota 700,000. Who is the vendor for this contract?
Chair Jones and Vice Chair Caffaro. The vendor is FAST Enterprises. They're fairly well known within the state. They have contracts with three different agencies, I believe.
Follow-up? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Bach?
You got it, Bacher.
Write it down. You'll take care of me. Thank you. Ms. Bacher, FAST Enterprises is the vendor, and are you saying, would, I don't understand how this gets paid without costing money. Is the contract that you currently have with FAST Enterprises, does that allow for amendments to that contract to pay the $700,000? Because they're going to need to get paid, and I'm just curious how this fits in with the current contract you have with them.
Mr. Chair and Vice Chair, we have a current contract with FAST that pays for the scheduling module, driver services module, and the vehicle module. We will engage in a contract. We have a contract for operations and maintenance that is not clearly outlined. The nice thing about FAST is they leave those choices up to us. And we will then define, as we move forward, what we want to spend that money on.
Mr. Chairman, follow up.
Follow up.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Bacher.
You can call me Lori B. if you want, if that's helpful.
So what is the total contract amount for them? I understand is that there is a contract currently, mm-hmm. and out of that contract there is a little bit, there's money that allows for amendments to include new projects. And is that what you're talking about here? And if so, what is the contract, the total contract?
So, Mr. Chair and Vice Chair, the contract for CARS implementation is $50.511 million. When that is completed, then we will move into an ongoing maintenance and support contract, and that is at $2.5 million per year.
Okay, one more follow-up, please.
Follow-up.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Bacher.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Would you need to procure for this, or how does it go right to, why does this not go through a procurement process, considering it's $700,000, regardless of the source of the funding?
So, Mr. Chair and Ms. Vice Chair, it did already go through. So when we did the procurement for our new system, it's part of the whole package, I would say, even though it's kind of broken up into a couple different pieces. So implementation and rollout, and then operations and maintenance. But it did go through procurement originally when we first did it.
Okay, last one, please.
Final follow-up.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Bacher, so what you're, if I understand this correctly, there is a contract for $50.5 million with FAST Enterprises, and this funding actually will come out of that $50 million. So what you're looking for is the authority to spend the money that's already been appropriated in the initial contract, or is this $700,000 outside of that $50 million?
Mr. Chair and Ms. Vice Chair, it is outside of that.
Interesting. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Fitzpatrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Question for the sponsor.
Madam Chair, good representative.
Representative
Mr.
Mitchell,
Chair, this is, I've been in too many committees this morning.
This is a conventional driver's license. This is what you proposed to have my driver's license on. Now, aside from the fact that this is trendy and this is old, tell me why this is better than this.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm not specifically saying one is better than the other. Everybody would still attain their hard copy ID. You then would take a picture, scan your ID, and it would allow that option to attain both. So say you get pulled over one day, you forgot your ID at home, you can then display it if you're going to an airport. Most airports now already allow you to scan your ID through your phone. It just gives you that option to have that. It's the 21st century. Most folks have their credit cards, their passports, they have their concert tickets, plane tickets, hotel keys already on their mobile wallets with their names already on it, but there's no way of verifying who that person is when they're using it, so might as well add your ID to that like multiple states have done already, and this is just trying to outline or start that process.
Thank you.
Additional questions? Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Ms. Bakri.
Mr. Chair, Representative.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Bakri, for those of us who are not on Section D and understand the intricacies of your budget on Section D, I want to say something to you and have you correct me if I'm wrong. What strikes me about this is that you have this contract, $55 million. Included in that contract is a line item that says maintenance and ongoing or support and maintenance. Mm-hmm. And that... that contract is funded with general fund money?
Mr. Chair and Representative, it is funded through the general fund. We're actually taking a loan from the general fund, and we have a repayment plan to pay back the money for the $50.5 million. And then after, when we go to support and maintenance, it is appropriated through, I think, our state special revenue. It's restricted funds. Chairman Mercer can correct me if I'm wrong about that.
He says yes. Follow up. Mr. Chair and Ms. Bakri, then, once again, correct me on this, but it seems like if we're funding this contract through general fund money, and you're taking some of that general fund money in support and maintenance, really we're paying this out of the general fund. It didn't go away. It's simply taken from a different source. Am I getting that?
Mr. Chair and Representative, I am not clear. I don't think that is correct. I think that the monies that the support and maintenance is going to come from will be from a different, not a general fund account.
Follow up. Mr. Chair and Ms. Bakri, so then it's coming from a state special mm-hmm. account. So mm-hmm. if we really, as you're describing it, had a fiscal note that reflected that, we'd have a line item here that says state special, $700,000.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I believe that is correct. I think we will have to do a revised fiscal note.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Additional questions from the committee? Seeing none, if the sponsor would like to close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Obviously, MVD gave their points. I think that this would help scratch that fiscal note from this specific bill. There are potential choices where we could put an amendment on and maybe just throw a $5, $10 application fee on there. That could also help generate revenue in the future and also help pay for this. But leave it up to the committee. Appreciate it. Do pass. Thank you.
That closes the hearing, and we are moving on to House Bill 349, Representative Galloway. Representative Sheldon Galloway, I apologize.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Appropriations Committee. My name is Representative Lola Sheldon Galloway, SHELDON-GALLOWAY, from House District 22 in Great Falls and Cascade County. I have only done an appropriations hearing once before, and I think I was a freshman and had no idea why I was here. And so I'm not sure what you want me to say, and if this is like doing a policy side, or if this is like begging for mercy.
It's like begging for money.
Okay.
And so it's primarily focused on the fiscal note.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I have been told that this first original note has been thrown out and there's a second note. I don't know if you guys have it in front of you, but I do not. And the original note is at 618,000 and the new note should be about 180.
Just a second, we're checking if we have the new note. Give us one second here.
Thank you.
Representative Sean Galloway, at this point, there's only one available. So apparently the other one has been printed, or potentially maybe it has been printed and you have not signed it yet, so we can have it released to us. Have you seen a copy yet?
No.
Okay, so but we...
I could tell you the rebuttal on this one.
Well, and potentially you could say... What, and if your witness is why it would be going to the new one as well, just absolutely talk to the money.
Okay. I'm always begging for money, so this should be really easy. If you look at what came in from assumptions on this bill, fiscal note, it on line 3 is asking for 3 FTEs, and this is not the intention of the bill, is to have people go out into the community looking for devices that have these filters turned on them. Why we would have full-time staff do that doesn't make any sense to me at all, because when I went to, I don't know if I can use name of companies in here, when I went to a manufacturer of a company from the country of the car that I drive and talk to them, and they are big device company and was actually at their plant that creates devices, like I just saw Representative Fitzpatrick's foldable phone, foldable glass. I asked them, how does this work? And these devices already have turn off and turn on filters on them. And it's just a matter of SKU numbers being changed. So our intention with this bill, and Representative Terry Moore has worked with me on this too, if there's any questions, is that the devices are already the way they are. They can come that way to Montana. There's no reason to be investigating this on a full-time basis. And it was my assumption it would just be like a case by case if we happened to trip over one, not going out and looking for one. For them to have on line 4 the ability on here to buy a car, to go out and investigate our devices, just seems really, really impractical to me. Something that isn't considered on this bill is the $10,000 fine if we find something. According to our Attorney General's office, that $10,000 covers their costs in legality, if any of that should come their way. And again, it's not in here as a revenue source, not that we're looking for fines for revenue, but it would offset that. That's where we came to our $10,000 fine in the bill. And let's see. According to this fiscal note, we would have 3 people sitting around in an office waiting for the phone call to call to go do something. That's not the intent. So they have come back as the Department of DOJ and made it more realistic if something should happen, ask for funds.
Okay, thank you. Are there proponents? Proponents online. Opponents online. Informational online. Now we'll do the questions from the committee. Representative Moore.
A little bit hard in that there is no one from the department that produced the
fiscal note to ask a lot of questions. So it puts us in, I think, an awkward position. There's no one here from the AG's office nor from the budget office that would maybe help us add clarity to this. And having worked with the sponsor on this bill, there's a lot of fault in what we see in this. As an example, the bill itself doesn't take effect till January of 2024, yet they show all three FTEs in here starting July 1st. I agree with the sponsor that there's not a need to hire three people to wait for the phone call, but I don't know, in that there's no one here to defend what they have, it seems like it would not be imprudent for there to be consideration when we do executive action for a suck-it-up amendment on this bill, that they would do it with existing resources within the Attorney General's office. Since they're, otherwise I would ask a lot more questions to get clarity about what they see the workload being impacted by this bill.
Okay. Representative Mercer, did you say you had a question as well?
Well, I do, but Mr. Chairman, I agree with Representative Moore that I would like to ask the Department of Justice the question. This fiscal note does not appear to be tied to the bill at all. The bill is trying to set up a structure, but I think the idea that we need a paralegal and a lawyer and an investigator and an undercover vehicle is not really. I don't see that the bill demands any of that. So this takes me back to a conversation that we had in this committee earlier about what do we do in this circumstance. It's almost as if we would need to take this money out of House Bill 2 if somehow we pass the bill and it's going to get internalized in their line for 24 and 25. So I don't find the note to be persuasive in any respect.
Okay, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I too am frustrated by not having DOJ here, but in lieu of that, I'll ask the sponsor a question.
For the sponsor.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hamilton.
Mr. Chair and Representative Sheldon Galloway, so you had rebutted on your rebuttal the idea that there would be 150 additional investigations per year. You didn't say the 150 wasn't right, but that's an increase of 15% of consumer complaints. And consumer complaints about what? Is that about obscenity filters or?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hamilton, I don't know. When I went to the department and asked about this, that Attorney General was shocked, his staff was shocked, and they were going back to, what is this, the Division of Criminal Investigation? And I have never heard back from that division on where this was. But I think it's ridiculous that Montana would hire three people to sit around waiting for a phone call to come, or are driving around the state of Montana stopping and having sting operations at high schools and having sting operations at elementary schools, or roadblocks along the way and check your phone to see if we have these devices turned off or on. I just think that's ridiculous.
Follow up. Mr. Chair and Representative Sheldon Galloway, I don't think your bill calls for them to drive around and do that, but apparently to respond to complaints, of which we don't know how many there might be, and maybe 15% is low, I have no idea. But on your rebuttal, you had rebutted with the idea that 150 investigations and a $10,000 fine would mean they would collect $1.5 million, which I assume you meant would offset this money. But in your assumption, you're assuming that all those 150 investigations are going to lead to a fine. And so I wonder why you think that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hamilton, pretty naive to appropriation side, and I want to stay that way. So I was just doing a rebuttal in in the fact that they were using 150 to come up with their number, so I'd use the 150 to come up with a revenue number. It just, I'm hoping we don't have any, but if that's how they'd come up with theirs, I think it's fair to balance it with the number that they were using, and that's the only reason that I used that number. I don't agree with it, but I can't say it wouldn't be. I can't say one way or the other.
Follow up. Mr. Chair and Representative, so then I look at item number five under the assumptions. It's estimated that one case per year would go to litigation. There'd be a cost of maybe $250,000 there. We have no idea if that's right. But would you agree that one case a year is all that's going to result from 150 investigations? Do you think it's going to be more, less?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hamilton, I also try to stay out of court and don't know how that works either. And so, you know, you guys are the experts on that. I would hope that the Department of Justice is the expert on that. I do know that we had a limit on how many $10,000 fines that we could do in a year, and they asked us to lift that because when you go after the big dog, it's a big dog with a little dog fight going on, and the sky's the limit in their money on their side of to defend that. So I don't know.
Thank you,
I don't know
Chair.
The answer.
Okay, additional questions from the committee. Representative Binkley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question for the sponsor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Binkley.
Mr. Chair, Representative Sheldon Galloway, I was just wondering, how do you envision the verification of implementation? So you're requiring the manufacturers to do this. How do you intend on this verification? Who's going to monitor that and follow that, since that's where the penalties will arise from?
I wish I had, Mr. Chair, sorry, Representative Binkley. I wish I had the expert that came and talked to us about this, and if I could maybe refer to Representative Moore. He's been in this conversation longer than I have. If he has an answer, would you mind, Mr. Chair?
Without objection, Representative Moore.
I don't know that I have a specific answer about how it would be monitored, but I have every reason to believe that the major manufacturers would in fact make every effort to comply with the request here. This, we would not be the first state that has requested this, and they already have the software tools embedded on the devices today. They already turn those filters on when these devices are sold to schools today. So the technology exists without any additional cost, and so they would have, I don't know why they would have any, they wouldn't have a cost, so they would just need to comply. And there are other states that have a law similar to this. There are several states contemplating additional laws like this. And so I think it is not, I don't think we have to have a monitor there. It would surface to the extent that there would be parents that would say, hey, I purchased a device and there were, the controls weren't in place. And so I think it would be grassroots as opposed to needing to have a team of folks at the Attorney General's office trying to monitor this.
Okay, Representative Winkley.
Just have a follow-up. So we have the $10,000 that would be imposed upon the manufacturer, but the manufacturers are going, they already have this in place, they're already doing it. So that would only be that would only impact them maybe one time if they didn't follow it. And then you have complaints coming from people who find that it's been turned on their phone, and we don't have the penalties on that. So I'm just having a difficult time trying to follow that that line of thinking. But so I don't know how you can follow up with that. But that's where I was going with my questions there.
Yeah, the Mr. Chair, Representative, the goal of the bill, just to go back to it so we don't get hung up on things, is that as these devices are sold in the state of Montana, that these filters would be turned on. I mean, that's all the bill does is ask that those be turned on at the point of sale, and that that would occur by the manufacturer with software that they already have developed and the tool. They're already embedded in the operating system, so it's just flipping those on as they are sold into Montana. There are ways for others, including parents, to remove those controls, and then that would, that's why we don't think that, that the real injury here is with the manufacturers, and there's not very many manufacturers, and we know that they have the that software in place, those tools in place. So I don't know why you would need to monitor the manufacturers. We would know right away if there were a problem and deal with the manufacturers, but they already are doing it in schools as an example.
Follow up.
Okay, thank you. I was just thinking that we would not see a lot of revenue come from this $10,000 per violation because we wouldn't see it violated very often. That was just my point.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I would agree. I think that we won't see very many complaints because I think the manufacturers will comply, and we won't see very much revenue, if any.
Okay, additional questions? So I would just have one because I missed a hearing on the floor, or if I was there, I didn't feel particularly well yesterday. So basically the default setting, my understanding then, would be some PG rating, and I used to install those in schools in the past, would be in the on position, and that rater, that toggle, then would be capable of being adjusted. And Representative Moore, you said that parents could turn it back off, or someone could turn it off if they so chose. Define the process of turning it off. Do they have to pay extra money to the manufacturer to turn it off? Is it just a toggle? Whomever, I'm not sure who to ask this question.
Mr. Chair, there would be no fee or compensation for that. As the parent, as these would be set up, the parent would have a code by which they could enter the code on the device and remove those filters if they chose to,
and
at no cost.
And Representative Moore, Representative Galloway, the explanation I would give for that is, as a person that installed a bunch of these filters, occasionally they filter out stuff. Obviously, they filter out stuff we would all agree should be filtered, but I've also seen, in particular in school settings, sometimes they filtered out the ability for kids to look, for instance, to a dual credit course in a college. Sometimes the filters catch strange stuff and occasionally need to be turned on and off that have nothing to do with XXX. And sometimes they completely miss XXX. So it actually works both ways. But and so on normally the PG raters, you can add items to the list, but you can also remove, and that was my question. Representative Beattie.
Thank you, Chairman Jones. I think the intention of this bill is quite good, and I think it's pretty well crafted. But I do have a couple of questions, and I think, although they may sound policy related, I think most of this policy is driving us toward, you know, what the cost of implementation is. And I guess the first question is for the sponsor.
For the sponsor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Beattie.
Chairman Jones, Representative Sheldon Galloway. So it is the manufacturer's responsibility to ensure that the obscenity filter is turned on, and not the vendor then. So it has to arrive, so it must arrive with the filter turned on, correct? So at that point, if the filter is turned on, it's and it has been certified, and if someone verified that, it would seem like we would have no need to be chasing manufacturers down at all.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beattie, there are countries in this world that do not allow pornography, even for adults, and I believe they have these products. So somehow we have successfully done that to satisfy the law of their land. So, yeah, I believe what you're saying is true.
Chairman Jones, follow up.
follow up?
So I'm getting somewhat technical here. I want to be sure that I know from your research and Representative Moore's research that you found that these filters exist and in some instances, even in this country, are turned on in certain settings. So they exist, but I think the culpability of the manufacturer should end when he delivers the phone here, because it would seem to me that passcodes being available means that down the road, a kid finds their parents' passcode. They turn it on, and now the manufacturer is going to be chased down. I mean, it would be much simpler to me if we simply, if there were a mechanism, maybe it's, and I'm not quite sure what that would be, to ensure that the phones that arrived had the filters turned on.
I have an answer for that.
Someone attested to that. And after that, I don't see the need for tracking anyone down.
Representative Galloway, Sheldon Galloway.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Beatty, when I was talking to the producers or the manufacturers, they simply said to me, what would happen, and I live in a world of SKU numbers in my hardware store, a SKU number from the manufacturer would be that device with it turned on, and they could have devices with it turned off. So in his mind, it was just simply the products from their company that come to Montana have to have this SKU number, and the retailer will be guaranteed by that SKU number that they had done their due diligence at the manufacturer's side, and that's what they were buying. And products coming into Montana would be that SKU number, and that should safeguard them, if you understand how SKU numbers work.
Thank you, Chairman Jones, Representative Galloway. I do understand how that works, and I think that's a great idea. But I'll continue to think that much of the talk here of penalties and that sort of thing is obviated if we have done that. I do have one other substantial concern, and this might get to where you'd run up legal costs. So we have an obscenity filter. Now let's define obscenity. Because I suspect some the filter is on, and yet we see some things that might be considered to be obscene by some folks. I'm trying to understand how that works when someone objects to that, to something they see, even though the obscenity filter is on.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beatty, when we talk to our legal counsel from this national organization on that, my brain just left. Tell me your question again. I had a good answer.
Chairman Jones, Representative Sheldon Galloway, oftentimes my question leaves me before your person has time to answer, but
moment.
It gets to, but now I'm back on track. So I'm wondering if the obscenity filter is turned on, and yet a parent looks at the obscenity filter and says, oh my gosh, I'm seeing something that's obscene.
Oh, I know my answer now.
Yeah.
Thank you. Triggering my brain.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beatty. The federal government has a definition for obscenity. I would, from this organization, believe that that is the definition that we're using, and that would be the definition that we would have the manufacturer comply to. And that's based off of court decisions in...
Final follow-up. Maybe. I think this is well researched. I think these answers satisfy not so much concerns about your intent, but in concerns about implementation. Mm-hmm. But just to be clear, so long as the obscenity filter is on, if some objectionable material comes on, there is no culpability for the manufacturer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beatty, I would say if it came into Montana with that SKU number on there and they've guaranteed us at their point that it was, they've covered themselves. How that got on there happened, not by their efforts, and they've done the due diligence of what we're asking them to do.
Thank you, Chairman Jones. Speak for the bill. I think this is a well thought out bill. I think that I do think that you may run into some difficulties because what some people consider to, what the definition of sanity is different than what is in different people's minds, I'm sure. And that may create some sort of a challenge, but thank you.
Representative Moore.
Yeah, I just maybe add a perspective and agree with what Representative Beattie is talking about. There is a definition of obscenity, and we're referring back to Montana Code, so it's not a new definition. That definition, as I understand it, I haven't tried to test this world, is that it's kind of the worst of the worst. And so some of the, I'll call it light pornography, would not be captured by these filters. It would be the more difficult arenas, and so that obscenity is pretty easy to capture. And I can imagine that there would be parents that would be disappointed, perhaps, that maybe it didn't capture some of the other pornography that is being pushed into phones. And it would only be obscenity as we have defined here, which is an, you know, a dark world in my judgment.
Okay, with that, would the sponsor like to close?
Thank you, Appropriations Committee and Chairman. What we are trying to do with this policy bill is to keep the kids who accidentally fall into pornography out of their hands. The kids who are going to look for it will, of course, override everything because they're smarter than us. And parents who want stricter restrictions on their phone still have that ability to restrict it even that much more if they want to. So we're not taking away parental rights. We're just asking for us to keep our kids innocent as much as possible. And I hope that you're happy with the second fiscal note, if it even comes in. I don't know, but I think this one's not correct. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. That closes the hearing, and we're now on House Bill 525. Representative Regeer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I am Amy Regeer, and I represent House District 6, which is the northwestern part of the Flathead Valley. Today I have before you House Bill 525. It just changes the penalty of a sexual assault by a psychotherapist from a misdemeanor to a felony. The fiscal note is zero on it, and it centers around we don't know how many charges will be brought up and the costs that are associated with that to be able to calculate that out. My hope is the policy is so good, no one will want to violate it, so we won't need any money. But with that, I will sit for questions.
Okay, are there proponents? Proponents online. Opponents? Opponents online. Informational. And we are quickly to questions from the committee.
Mr. Chairman, I'll ask the question, why is this bill here?
Yes, it appears to have a zero fiscal note. So I'm not entirely sure why the bill is here. Representative Regeer, we appreciated you having the practice. Representative, would you like to close?
I close. Thank you all.
Okay, I think that's our six, right? My thought process here is we have, and I'll read these, we have House Bill 722, which I believe has an amendment coming, right? So if you want to write these down so we have them. We have House Bill 669, which I believe has an amendment coming. We have all the bills you heard today, 136, 349, 457, 463, and I'll read them again, 519 and 525. So 722, 669, 136, 349, 457, 463, 519, 525. We have possible reconsiderations I've heard of, and there could be more, but I've heard of reconsiderations on three bills, 36, 321, 332. That's what I have heard, unless someone else brings additional items up. I know there are some suck-it-up amendments and things that are people are attempting to get done for the 6 today, so we will recess until 10:30, right? So that gives us 40 minutes. A couple announcements so I can make sure I say it several times. One is, I understand over that transmittal break that everybody else is not back till the evening of the 9th. Remember, we actually begin the morning of the 9th. So on March 9th, the Appropriation Committee will begin hearing House Bill 2. So while everyone gets to come back that night, we get to come back that morning or the night before. So as you start thinking about your transmittal break, remember we're back a day early on transmittal break. The other thought is, I think we might have a couple bill drop coming off the floor today. We're likely to come in after the floor today and work on our bill drop. So with that, we're in recess till 10:30. for the... Okay, we'll go ahead and call the committee back to order, and we'll start on our executive action as soon as our vice chair gets here.
Mr. Chairman, I move due pass on House Bill 722.
Okay, it's been moved due pass on House Bill 722. Representative Mercer, I believe you have an amendment.
I do, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move HB0722.001.001.
On your amendment, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the amendment, and obviously the speaker is here and he can weigh in, but I believe the amendment maintains the spirit of the bill and just slightly tweaks the mechanics. So essentially what the amendment would do would require that as part of the budgeting process, as you can see on line 16 and 17, page 1, that the budgets would come to us with total amounts for each state district court program. Those would be presented and included separately as provided in 17.7.111. So for those of you without Section D experience, what we get is sort of an overall number for judicial branch operations. We don't get specific numbers for the district court. And this bill is trying to create some transparency in terms of actual district court spending. And so the idea here would be that we would have, as part of the budget process, each of the 20, I think it's 22, I always forget, but that for each of the 22 state district courts, we'd have an actual overall budget number appropriated, proposed and then appropriated for each district court. You heard in the testimony from both the budget office and the court administrator that if they were concerned, I think, that if we had separate line items for each of the categories in 35901, that would cause a flurry of budget change documents. And I don't think that there's much risk, if any, that would happen with this, which is we would have one proposed appropriation number, we would appropriate a particular number for each district, and then there's a reporting requirement on page 1, line 2, that there'd be quarterly reports to the LFC, which would give a breakout for each of the categories in 35901, and then a description of expenditures for items that aren't covered by 35901. So I think it's arguably different than the bill in its original form, but I think it is in keeping with the intention of having greater transparency. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Representative Kirk Carpenter, then I'll go to you, Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a quick question for the amendment sponsor. Mr. Chair, Representative Mercer, I see you have in here total amounts for each state district court program. I'm wondering if that would include the local, our district courts are also funded with local funds, and I'm wondering if that would include us having a picture into those local funds.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Kirk Carpenter, thanks for the question. This focuses on what we are appropriating. So it, as part of the budget process, they would need to disclose what they need to make a request for each budget for each of the district courts, and then the reporting requirement would require a report out for all of the expenditures. And so I think it's directly tied to our appropriation.
Okay, Representative Regeer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As the amendment sponsor said, it does change a little bit of the content of the original bill. However, I believe it gets us close enough to the mark of us being the appropriators. It gives us enough eyes, and especially with the reporting, quarterly reports, I think we get to the spot where we would know if our appropriation was potentially used in the wrong direction. So I would support this amendment.
Okay, Representative Moore.
Mr. Chair, and perhaps for either you or the amendment sponsor, just a curiosity, it seems like with this modification through this amendment that the fiscal note would likely be different and at a lesser amount, perhaps zero. I'm not sure how the process works, and terms of, would that, would there be a second fiscal note calculated or presented in the Senate when it moved its way over?
Representative Moore, yes. So what will happen when an amendment impacts a bill, it's fiscal, an amended fiscal note can be requested. The normally the executive branch will send out a request that the amendment has substantially changed, or the sponsors can ask, has changed the impact. And as long as leadership approves the request, then an updated fiscal note comes through. And so, yes, it will ultimately, unless somebody puts a blockade in the road, it will generate a new fiscal note.
Thank you.
Additional questions? Seeing none. Can we voice vote this amendment? All those in favor of the amendment indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Is there opposition? Amendment passes unanimous.
Mr. Chairman, I move to pass on House Bill 722 as once amended.
It's been moved to pass on House Bill 722 as once amended. Discussion on the amended bill. Representative Windy Boy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So as we move forward, is this bill, after you guys pass this, then it's going to go to the floor?
Yes, Representative Woodson.
So the fiscal updated fiscal note won't be following it on the floor?
Representative Windy Boy, depending when it hits the floor, the fiscal note may not be there in time, but our rules don't say that it has to have the updated fiscal note. It says it has to have a fiscal note because in situations like this, the updated fiscal note, which has like 7 days to generate, could potentially kill the bill.
Well, I hope future legislatures keep that in mind, that, you know, to find a fiscal note that doesn't match up with the bill going into the other chamber, I think is risky business.
Additional discussion on the bill.
Question?
Okay, a question has been called for. Do we want to voice vote this will or roll call vote it? Roll call vote.
Vice Chair Keenan.
Yes.
Representative Beattie.
Yes.
Representative Binkley.
Yes.
Vice Chair Caffaro.
No.
Representative Kirk Carpenter.
No.
Representative Falk.
Yes.
Representative Fitzpatrick.
Yes.
Representative Gillette.
Yes.
Representative Hamilton.
No.
Representative Hastings.
Yes.
Representative Hillegard.
Yes.
Representative Hopkins.
Yes.
Representative Keough.
No.
Representative Mercer.
Yes.
Representative Moore.
Yes.
Representative Knave.
Yes.
Representative Stuart Paraguay.
No.
Representative Reed.
Yes.
Representative Regeer.
Yes.
Representative Schillinger.
Yes.
Representative Tuss.
No.
Representative Windy Boy.
No.
Chair Jones.
Yes. Bill passes.
And I move House Bill 669 do pass.
Okay, members, House Bill 669 has been moved to pass. There will be a couple of bills that are potentially set in process today in order to be able to be fully debated after we get back. 669 is part of a discussion on marijuana revenue and its dispositions. And so this, we'll see if this bill follows its course to potentially change format to allow us a discussion a little later and then delay consideration until at that time. But with that, Representative Mercer, do you have an amendment?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move to amend House Bill 669 with HB 0669.001.001.
On your amendment, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This amendment appropriates, you'll see on lines 26 through 28 of page 6, this will add an appropriation of $10,000 from the general fund to DPHHS for a reporting requirement for the HART fund. And you'll see also that is what we will be getting in the form of a reporting requirement is set forth in the new section 7, which is just above that on lines 15 through 19. That's the scope of the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, a discussion on the amendment. Vice Chair Caffaro.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Representative, I thought we passed a bill that already does this, which is sponsored by Representative Carlson. How is this different than her bill?
Yeah.
Or not passed it completely, but out of the House?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Kaffir, I don't think that that has been finalized, and B, I don't think it is very precise. So I believe this is arguably distinguishable.
Okay.
And I should add, Mr. Chairman, that as the deliberations continue, if there are things that members of the committee think should be added to the reporting requirement, I'm certainly open to that.
Additional discussion on the amendment. Do we want to take a vote? Representative Hamilton, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You said it a little bit vaguely in your introduction, but I just wanted to be ultra clear. This is a general bill right now, but with this going on, this is recast as an appropriations bill.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Additional discussion on the amendment. Roll call vote.
Vice Chair Keenan.
Yes.
Representative Beattie.
Yes.
Representative Binkley.
Yes.
Vice Chair Cafaro.
No.
Representative Kirk Carpenter.
No.
Representative Falk.
Yes.
Representative Fitzpatrick.
Yes.
Representative Gillette.
Yes.
Representative Hamilton.
Yes.
Representative Hastings.
Yes.
Representative Hillegard.
Yes.
Representative Hopkins.
Yes.
Representative Keough. Representative Mercer.
Yes.
Representative Moore.
Yes.
Representative Nath.
Yes.
Representative Stuart Paraguay.
No.
Representative Reed.
Yes.
Representative Regeer.
Yes.
Representative Schillinger.
Yes.
Representative Tess.
Yes.
Representative Windyboy.
No.
Chair Jones.
Yes. Okay. Move the bill as once amended, sir.
Mr. Chairman, I would move to delay consideration of House Bill 669 to a date after March 9th, 2023.
Okay, you've heard the motion. Discussion on the motion. Roll call vote on the motion.
Question.
Sorry, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question would simply be, given that we've now recast this as an appropriations bill, is there any reason to even need to take an action of delaying?
Representative Hamilton, there's two theories of thought on that. One is you have to dispose of a motion, one I have rarely followed, but sometimes folks encourage me to do so. And another one, this is a formal disposition of a motion so that it says at which time it'll be reconsidered. I've often paused right here and let that be sufficient to call for fiscal notes, etc. Part of the questions I asked staff was, what was doing this perfect according to Hoyle, even though the other one appears to work just fine? This makes it clear that this motion is disposed of till a certain date.
Thank you.
Roll call vote on the motion.
Vice Chair Keenan.
Yes.
Representative Beattie.
Yes.
Representative Binkley.
Yes.
Vice Chair Cafaro.
No.
Representative Kirk Carpenter.
No.
Representative Falk.
Yes.
Representative Fitzpatrick.
Yes.
Representative Gillette.
Yes.
Representative Hamilton.
No.
Representative Hastings.
Yes.
Representative Hillegard.
Yes.
Representative Hopkins.
Yes.
Representative Keough.
No.
Representative Mercer.
Yes.
Representative Moore.
Yes.
Representative Nave.
Yes.
Representative Stuart Paraguay.
No.
Representative Reed.
Yes.
Representative Regeer.
Yes.
Representative Schillinger.
Yes.
Representative Tuss.
No.
Representative Windyboy.
Nope.
Chair Jones.
Yes. Motion passes. Bill is the action. Further executive action is delayed on this bill as amended to a date certain.
Mr. Chairman, I move to pass on House Bill 136.
It's been moved to pass on House Bill 136, bill we heard this morning. Is there discussion? Seeing none, go ahead and do a voice vote if that is acceptable. Is that acceptable? I see no one raising their hands. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposition? Passes unanimous.
I move due pass on House Bill 349.
Okay, it's been due pass on 349.
I know they're not amendments, I don't believe, so House Bill 3. Oh, wait, Representative Moore.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, as we had a lengthier conversation about the lack of any informational witnesses around the fiscal note, and no one really believing that that fiscal note has any credibility, sounds like the sponsor has requested a further fiscal note, and so I'm not sure about the exact disposition. My inclination, if the committee was open to it, would be to have a conceptual amendment within the bill that it would that the department would contend with this with existing resources. But if that might be of favor of the committee.
So, Ms. Johnson, I believe this was requested of you, and you're comfortable with then a suck it up amendment?
Sure, I can draft that.
So basically it says that this, the department will do this within existing resources. You're comfortable with that?
I am.
Okay, so is that a motion?
That would be a motion of that amendment to do it with existing resources.
So you've heard the motion, discussion on the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to say that I did talk to the chief of staff at the department, and unfortunately, I think he was being pulled in multiple directions this morning and was sorry that he was unable to be here. He has submitted a revised fiscal note. Obviously, it's not in the system, but I think that the sponsor's representation about the number coming down is true, that the number probably will look something more like 100 or 125. And so from the perspective of the potential for a second up amendment there, we're not talking about 600,000. We're talking about a projection somewhere around 100 or 125.
Representative Wendy Boyd.
Mr. Chairman, you know, this needs to stop. I mean, if we're going to vote on something, let's have it in front of us. Because, man, these conceptuals are just kind of getting out of hand here. And, man, I tell you, this giving away what we're giving away and passing something that is just might be out there, we can catch in midair. That's all I have to say.
Okay. Noted. Representative Moore.
You know, I'd just say in closing, you know, I don't see it as in midair, Representative, Mr. Chair, in that it just keeps... We know that the fiscal note as prepared is unreasonable. And if there is a revised fiscal note, it could be taken care of in the Senate if this bill continues through the House. And there'll be a second amendment of that fiscal note that could be addressed. And so it's not the end game here at the Appropriations Committee this morning.
Okay, Representative Wendy Boyd.
And thank you for making my point. Representative, the point I was making was that we have an amendment and we're always running these conceptuals. I mean, if we're going to vote on something, let's vote on something that's in front of us that I can see. I mean, it's just that's why it's up in the air, is because conceptual motion that's on the floor is up in the air. That's all point I was making.
Okay. Roll call vote on the amendment.
Vice Chair Keenan.
Yes.
Representative Beattie.
Yes.
Representative Binkley.
Yes.
Vice Chair Cafaro.
No.
Representative Kirk Carpenter.
No.
Representative Falk.
Oh, no kidding. Yes, by proxy.
Representative Fitzpatrick.
Yes.
Representative Gillette.
Yes.
Representative Hamilton.
No.
Representative Hastings.
Yes.
Representative Hilligard.
Yes.
Representative Hopkins.
Yes.
Representative Keough.
No.
Representative Mercer.
Yes.
Representative Moore.
Yes.
Representative Knave.
Yes.
Representative Stuart Peregoy.
No.
Representative Reed.
Yes.
Representative Regeer.
Yes.
Representative Schillinger.
Yes.
Representative Tuss.
Yes.
Representative Wendy Boy.
No.
Chair Jones.
Yes. Amendment passes.
Mr. Chairman, I move do pass as amended once, House Bill 349.
Discussion on the once amended bill. Discussion on the once amended bill. Roll call vote.
Vice Chair Keenan.
Yes.
Representative Beattie.
Yes.
Representative Binkley.
No.
Vice Chair Caffaro?
No.
Representative Kirk Carpenter?
No.
Representative Falk?
Yes, by proxy.
Representative Fitzpatrick?
No.
Representative Gillette?
Yes.
Representative Hamilton?
No.
No, we're on.
Representative Hastings?
Yes.
Representative Hilligard?
Yes.
Representative Hopkins?
No.
Representative Keough?
No.
Representative Mercer?
Yes.
Representative Moore?
Yes.
Representative Nave?
Yes.
Representative Stuart Paraguay?
No.
Representative Reed?
Yes.
Representative Regeer?
Yes.
Representative Schillinger?
Yes.
Representative Tuss?
No.
Representative Windy Boy?
No.
Chair Jones?
Yes. Amendment passes 1310. Bill passes 1310. I apologize.
Mr. Chairman, I move to pass on House Bill 457.
It's been moved to pass on House Bill 457. Representative Mercer.
Mr. Chairman, we talked about an amendment for this bill, and Ms. Johnson prepped the amendment, and then Representative Kirk Carpenter and I had some additional conversations. And so you've got the amendment in front of you. I'm going to move the amendment, but then ask that we do a substitute to make a change. So, Mr. Chairman, I move that we amend House Bill 457 with HB 0457.002.001.
Okay, Representative Mercer, on your amendment.
The purpose of the amendment, Mr. Chairman, is that, as I think that the sponsor's comments indicated, the addition of mind-altering substance is quite vague, and I think arguably impermissibly vague for a statute that a prosecutor would charge where an assault is at issue. Upon our further discussions, I do believe it's the sponsor's intention that we leave the term prescription medications or another drug as part of this. So in other words, the amendment would merely strike or a mind-altering substance. And we probably need a comma after. We need to turn medication into medications and add a comma. I think after medications. So my substitute amendment is that we would adopt that instead of 001.
So first, Ms. Johnson, you created the amendment, and Representative Mercer is reducing the amount of stuff he's striking.
Right, I understand how it would be revised.
Okay, so one second, let me make sure I understand what's going on. So you're making a substitute motion on your amendment so that it doesn't strike as many items, and I will speak to these. I will speak briefly to these conceptuals. I'm not normally a fan of so many conceptual amendments, but our challenge here is stuff that does not pass today does not pass. And so I'm going to give more grace to conceptuals today than I normally do. Usually I like them simple dates or simple changes that allow us to process. But with that statement, discussion on the amendment has conceptually changed. Representative Winnie Boy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question for the amendment sponsor. So I'm looking at 19 here. And the striking of or mind-altering substance, comma, and then the rest of it, including prescription medication or another drug, is inserted back in?
Yeah. So let's just, if we can do that, Mr. Chairman, let's just go back over it again. So all the substitute amendment strikes the words or a mind-altering substance. So it keeps in, and it also strikes out including. So it... We need a comma after gamma, hydro, whatever that is. And then we've got retained in this would be prescription medications, comma, or another drug, comma, without the individual's consent. So simply put, all we're doing is striking from 001 or a mind-altering substance including.
Thank you.
OK. Okay, additional discussion, Representative Kirk Carpenter.
Thank you. When I ran this, thank you, Mr. Chair, when I ran this new amendment by the sponsor, she was pretty excited about it. I think it really captures kind of what she was attempting to do with the bill. And so I think this encapsulates also kind of some of the concerns that it seems like the Judiciary Committee had, but tightens things up and makes it easier to utilize.
Additional discussion on the amendment. Can we voice vote this amendment? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Oh, list Representative Cafaro is opposed, and we better call a proxy now. So you just got
Representative Falk votes yes by proxy.
Okay, amendment passes.
Mr. Chairman, I move to pass as once amendment House Bill 457.
Okay, it's been due pass as once amended. Discussion on the bill. Discussion on the bill. Seeing none, can we voice vote this bill? You want a roll call vote?
Vice Chair Keenan.
Yes.
Representative Beattie.
Yes.
Representative Binkley.
Yes.
Vice Chair Cafaro.
No.
Representative Kirk Carpenter.
Yes.
Representative Falk.
Yes.
Representative Fitzpatrick.
Yes.
Representative Gillette.
Yes.
Representative Hamilton.
Yes.
Representative Hastings.
Yes.
Representative Hillegard.
Yes.
Representative Hopkins.
Yes.
Representative Keough.
Yes.
Representative Mercer.
Yes.
Representative Moore.
Yes.
Representative Nave.
Yes.
Representative Stuart Paraguay.
Yes.
Representative Reed.
Yes.
Representative Regeer.
Yes.
Representative Schillinger.
Yes.
Representative Tuss.
Yes.
Representative Windyboy. Yes. Chair Jones.
Yes. Bill passes.
Mr. Chairman, I move due pass on House Bill 463.
Been moved due pass on House Bill 463. I got a ding for 463. Okay.
No amendments?
I do not believe there are any amendments. Discussion on House Bill 463. Representative Fitzpatrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My thought about this bill as it's currently structured is it's fundamentally a waste of time. If you're going to have a cutoff for $100,000 for a contract, probably the only thing that will ever get reported in this thing would be purchases of meat products, which are locally produced, and probably some bakery goods, which are also locally produced. But the rest of the items, liquor, for example, I don't think we're going to have too many state agencies buying $100,000 worth of locally brewed beer. And the rest of the stuff, like produce and whatever, is going to come from out of state. So I think maybe the intent is fine, but I just don't think the bill actually will do anything that's of any value or consequence. Thank you.
Additional discussion on the bill, Representative Wendy Boyd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the comments there, Representative. You know, this thing about local cattle being slaughtered here and distributed here and sold in Montana is kind of a situation that I've always had, because whenever I used to sell cows down in Billings when I used to be in the ranching business with my dad, was when we sold the cows in Billings, they get shipped out to Nebraska or someplace over to the Big Five. And so that is kind of a metaphor that I don't agree with on that. So until that cool bill comes through and gets passed, then I would support that. Otherwise, I'm for this one.
Okay, additional conversation?
Question?
Question's been called. Roll call vote.
Vice Chair Keenan.
No.
Representative Beattie.
No.
Representative Binkley.
No.
Representative Vice Chair Cafaro.
Yes.
Representative Kirk Carpenter.
Yes.
Representative Falk.
No by proxy.
Representative Fitzpatrick.
No.
Representative Gillette.
Yes.
Representative Hamilton.
Yes.
Representative Hastings.
No.
Representative Hillegard.
No.
Representative Hopkins.
Yes.
Representative Keough.
Yes.
Representative Mercer. Representative Moore.
No.
Representative Nave.
No.
Representative Stuart Paraguay.
Yes.
Representative Reed.
No.
Representative Regeer.
No.
Representative Schillinger.
No.
Representative Tess?
Yes.
Representative Wendy Boy?
Yes.
Chair Jones?
Yes. Bill fails.
Mr. Chairman, I move due pass on House Bill.
Let me just check the vote on that. We had, yeah, just a second. We had two different counts. Let me make sure I got the vote count right. Go
ahead. Chair Jones, would you like me to call the ones I have marked as no and then I can be corrected?
So let.
Oh, there's period. Well, I'll try the no, the yeses.
Okay, let's.
I have yes votes for Vice Chair Caffaro, Representative Kirk Carpenter, Representative Fitzpatrick, Representative Gillette, Representative Hamilton.
Fitzpatrick was a no.
Okay. And Representative Hopkins, Representative Keough, Representative Stuart Paraguay, Representative Tuss, Representative Wendy Boy, and Chair Jones.
Yes. Okay. Okay, Fitzpatrick was wrong on that vote. So, okay, so Bill still fails, but at least we got the vote correct.
Mr. Chairman, I move due pass on House Bill
1310.
519.
It's been moved due pass on House Bill 519. Oh, yeah, I'll do it after that. I need to remember to table that bill next. But it's been moved due pass. Actually, withdraw that and let's table the other
bill. I'll withdraw my motion on due pass for 519. Mr. Chairman, I move to table House Bill 463.
So we're going to reverse the motion to table. Is that correct, or we want to call the vote? Call it? No, just reverse the vote to table. Right, House bill, this bill is tabled. Now back.
463 is tabled?
Yep.
Mr. Chairman, I move due pass on House Bill 519.
It's moved due pass on House Bill 519. I don't believe there's any amendments on 519. Representative Mercer, you're smiling. Do you have an amendment on 519? I was nervous. Discussion on House Bill 519. Representative Hamilton.
I do not have an amendment either, Mr. Chair. but as I look at this bill, I think, you know, this might be a convenient, kind of nice thing to have. It's optional. But the sleight of hand to say it's not going to cost $700,000 because it comes from line B instead of line A strikes me as not a very, I'll say a little bit in disingenuous way to look at this. So for a convenience, I don't see that I'd like to spend $700,000 on that, so I'll be a no.
Representative Tuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would echo what my colleague had to say about this. This seems unnecessary and very expensive. I would urge a no vote.
Representative Moore.
Yeah, just back to a question again about mechanics. If we approve this bill today, then I assume the $700,000 shows up in the status sheet as $700,000 until there is a revised fiscal note.
That is correct, and we've been checking on the revised fiscal notes, but they're just swamped.
Right.
So it'd be another 6 days, but ultimately it's or more, whatever time it takes them to get it through. Yes, sir. Go ahead, Ned.
Mr. Chair, Representative Moore, just to clarify that, yes, it will show up on the listing of bills on our status sheet, but it will not be in the bottom line numbers of the status sheet. It will show up in the potential column because it is not actually appropriated or in the bill itself. It is one of those things that will show up in the potentials that will not show up in the bottom line status sheet numbers at this point in time.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Wendy Boyd.
I have a question, and after the floor session and everything, I got to thinking about this. What would happen, say, for example, our good representative who has a flip phone lost his phone? Does that mean that this would also lose too, or is it backed up someplace? Or
I imagine it's like losing your driver's license, so you'd probably have to get a new license, put it back in the phone, right?
Yeah, okay.
Phone's back up, but what number? Okay, additional discussion, Representative Caffaro.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I thought it was interesting that in questioning the what I learned was that the vendor has a contract currently for just a little bit over $50 million, and that this $700,000 couldn't be absorbed in that $50 million. And to me, maybe it's a standard operating procedure, or however you say that, for IT, but $700,000 should go through the procurement process, and I still don't get where the money's going to come from. And further, the sponsor said, well, maybe we could just add a tax to driver's licenses, which would mean me, with my regular driver's license, because I'll never get one on my phone, would be paying for somebody to have the convenience of having their driver's license on their phone. And I just don't think that's right for people to pay higher taxes for yet another IT project. So I'll be voting no.
Representative Hopkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, let me say that I'm glad we've all come to the conclusion that we can't tax one individual to pay for another individual's service. I know that's been a bit of an ongoing conversation here in the legislature for a little while. To be perfectly clear about the way this works, it's not going to cost $700,000. It will cost money. It'll probably end up costing somewhere around half that. And I mean, with all due respect, the entire point of IT is to build the functionality in order to, you know, allow individuals who are interacting with government to have an easier time and better services. Seems like a pretty simple bill to me.
Representative Winnebite.
I have an idea. Let's take it from the Heart Fund.
Yet another thing paid for by marijuana. Representative Mercer.
Mr. Chairman, I do understand where the sponsor's going. I think he's essentially saying, get us out. I mean, we're already pretty much tied to our devices for a variety of things as it stands, and it would be useful. 10 years from now, maybe we won't have physical driver's licenses. But I am, we've spent a fair amount of time trying to understand the car's procurement. We started trying to understand that during the interim. And, you know, I think the Cliff Notes version of the car's procurement, and you're going to hear a lot about it when we get House Bill 2 in here, is that in Senate Bill 191, we gave the department authorization to move forward with this very large Merlin replacement. I don't really think that many of us in the House, and I'll point the finger at myself, I don't think that we fully appreciated what we were committing to based upon what the Senate had done in Senate Bill 191. Nonetheless, and my colleagues in Section D may want to weigh in on this issue. Nonetheless, we have cars, and you are going to see a whole separate line item in terms of annual maintenance. So you heard about a loan this morning, you heard about a $50 million procurement, and then you heard that we will be spending something annually to do essentially maintenance and operations and what you need to do as part of the system. So the thing that struck me about the fiscal note was originally the department thought that there would be this cost incurred in 2024, and then I think by the time the hearing was over, we sort of heard that that might be spread over time, but there's going to need to be a fairly substantial cost just to create this as an option. So I'm going to be a no, largely because I don't see this as an urgent thing, and I would really like to look into why it will cost this much in order to come up with this functionality. We have a very expensive contract that is going to give us kind of an all-in driver's license, titling, you name it. That's what CARS is supposed to do for us. I assume that we're not at the front of the line in terms of this digital driver's license. There are other states that are doing it. I'd really like to have more clarity on why it would cost this much. And I think at a minimum, it means that we're going to be taking money that would otherwise be used for operations and the other maintenance and functionality of the system, and we're going to take money out of that fund for this purpose. And I'm just not wild about that without knowing more, so I'm a no.
Representative Beattie.
Thank you, Chairman Jones. Perhaps like my colleague two seats down, I'm not enthusiastic about being pulled kicking and screaming into the 21st century. I will always have my plastic-covered driver's license, and I feel comfortable when I have that in my hands. That being said, I may be a lonely yes vote on this, but I think this is the wave of the future. I do object to the fiscal note as we've seen it, and it would be nice to have a bit more time for us to resolve that. We don't have it right now. I'm happy to have our friends over in the Senate have a bit of work to do, and would expect them to delve into this. So I'll be a yes on this.
Never a question.
You know what, Mr. Chairman, I would... The way that I heard the sponsors reply about this, the cost, was that those people who choose to get a digital driver's license on their phone would pay a fee. I did not hear that all of us are going to pay for those few people that, or those people that want to get a digital driver's license on their phone. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Representative Wendy Boehm.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to still be a no on this. You know, I thank Vice Chairman for his explanation of that, but this is just going down that slippery slope that we don't have to pay today, but we will tomorrow.
Representative Hamilton.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, for a double dip, but I'd like to just address Vice Chair Keenan's point. I think the sponsor said, gee, as an alternative to paying for it this way, we could see individuals who want this pay a fee. I don't think he said there is a fee now.
Seeing no additional questions.
Did I say that?
Question has been called. Roll call vote.
Vice Chair Keenan.
Yes.
Representative Beatty.
Yes.
Representative Binkley.
No.
Vice Chair Caffaro.
No.
Representative Carpenter.
No.
Representative Falk.
Yes, by proxy.
Representative Fitzpatrick.
No.
Representative Gillette.
Yes.
Representative Hamilton.
No.
Representative Hastings.
Yes.
Representative Hellegarde.
Yes.
Representative Hopkins.
Yes.
Representative Keough.
No.
Representative Mercer.
No.
Representative Moore.
Yes.
Representative Knave.
No.
Representative Stuart Paragoy.
No.
Representative Reed.
Yes.
Representative Regeer.
Yes.
Representative Schillinger.
No.
Representative Tuss.
No.
Representative Windy Boy.
No.
Chair Jones.
Yes.
Fails.
Right. Bill fails 11 to 12.
Mr. Chairman, I move to pass.
Wait. Reverse the motion.
Okay. Motion to table. 9.
So we reverse the motion to table, correct? Without objection. Bill's table.
Well, Chairman, I would move to table House Bill 463. We're going back to that, or did we do that? We did that. All right. Thank you. That statement, motion. Mr. Chairman, I would move to pass on House Bill 525.
It's been moved to pass on House Bill 525. Is there discussion? And that's the bill that appeared to be here with no fiscal note. Are we okay with a... voice vote on this bill?
Which one is this? Oh, yeah, this is Amy's.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, we're good.
So, I will. No, I tried that last time, and it messes up our system, and it didn't work well. So, are we okay with the voice, Representative Hamilton? Roll call vote.
Vice Chair Keenan.
Yes.
Representative Beatty.
Yes.
Representative Binkley.
Yes.
Vice Chair Caffaro.
Yes.
Representative Kirk Carpenter.
Yes.
Representative Falk.
Yes, by proxy.
Representative Fitzpatrick.
Yes.
Representative Gillette.
Yes.
Representative Hamilton.
No.
Representative Hastings.
Yes.
Representative Hellegarde.
Yes.
Representative Hopkins.
Yes.
Representative Keough.
No.
Representative Mercer?
Yes.
Representative Moore?
Yes.
Representative Knave?
Yes.
Representative Stuart Paragoy?
Yes.
Representative Reed?
Yes.
Representative Regeer?
That's you, sir.
Yes.
Proxy.
Representative Schillinger?
Yes.
Representative Tuss?
Yes.
Representative Windy Boy?
No.
Chair Jones?
Yes. Bill passes.
Mr. Chairman? I just want to make a statement of why my vote, no vote is because that unknown scares the heck out of me.
The unknown amount, correct.
Okay, that takes care of this morning's action.
Okay. We're working on it, yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that the Appropriations Committee reconsider its action on House Bill 321.
Okay, you heard the reconsider motion on House Bill 321. Representative Hamilton.
I'm not discussing on the motion, just wondering, this has been tabled, so wouldn't it be take it off the table? Does that matter?
Reconsider its motion to table or to remove from the table.
Okay.
So I guess he could say, either way, move the bill from the table or reconsider the motion to table. It's to take the bill off the table. Okay. Those in favor of taking the bill off the table indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposition?
No.
Representative Wendy Boy. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I move due pass on House Bill 321.
It's been moved due pass on House Bill 321. Representative Moore, you have an amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I make a motion to amend House Bill 321 with HB 0321.001.005.
On your amendment, sir.
Yes, you'll see on the amendment on page one, just providing an appropriation. And in the page, last page, appropriate $1,000 to the general fund of the coal board for grant purposes. And the motivation behind this is to keep this bill alive and in the hopper for consideration after transmittal and to keep it moving forward as opposed to being stuck in the dungeon.
Okay, discussion on the amendment. Are we comfortable voice voting the amendment? Yes or no? Okay, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment passes unanimous. Okay, now we got to move the bill and then you got to do your motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move to do pass as amended on House Bill 321.
Okay, and then your additional motion.
Yep. And now, Mr. Chairman, I would substitute motion to move to delay consideration of House Bill 321 to a date after March 9th, 2023.
Okay, so you heard the motion to delay additional consideration on this bill till sometime after March 9th, 2023. Discussion on this. Representative Hamilton.
Could you please explain the difference between delaying and tabling it again?
So there is, depending upon who you talk to, there seems to be a discussion that a tabling is considered a negative action, and that once a negative action is taken on a bill, it cannot request a fixal note or potentially change its status from a general bill to an appropriations bill or a revenue bill. I have seen that happen both ways. In fact, that's what we used to always do is table them. Ultimately, we were told, don't table them because then you can't have any additional action. You have to leave them alive and well until after the toggle switches. This merely lets the bill sit alive and well, but doesn't, and it also completes the motion, right? It stops the, you're supposed to dispose of any motion. Again, something that seems to be newer this time that wasn't in the past, but apparently this completes the motion, so now the bill sits and waits till sometime after March 9th for additional action.
Thank you for that. For the question then, in talking to Ms. Johnson about this, this bill, had we not untabled it, would have, being a general bill going through the end of this week, would theoretically be dead, except if we put an amendment back on there for an appropriation, which brings it back to life again as an appropriation bill, even after Friday's deadline. Do I have that right?
Again, the disagreements on process here, I spent the time going, talking to our code commissioner and asked what was the safest process to do this. this was considered the safest process. When reading through the details, there was that little section that said negative action, and a tabling is considered negative action. Because we're the Appropriation Committee, we get some leeway on what you just said, Representative Hamilton, but the question becomes how much leeway. And so the concern was that if you switched the toggle on this bill or on Representative Mercer's bill, so they were revenue or appropriations bills, and they were put on the table before the toggle physically switched on the page, that the toggle would not be switching on a bill that had had negative action. This ensures both of them wait. I can tell you from the days of Pettish that's different, and I can tell you it's been different over the years, but this was the agreed upon safe thing to do this time.
Thank you.
Representative Winnebago.
Thank you for that explanation, Mr. Chairman, but I'm still a no. This thing was ready for dinner on the table, so I hoped it would stay there.
Okay. All right, roll call vote on the motion.
Vice Chair Keenan.
Yes.
Representative Beattie.
Yes.
Representative Binkley.
Yes.
Vice Chair Caffaro.
Yes.
Representative Kirk Carpenter.
Yes.
Representative Falk. Falk.
Yes. Proxy.
Representative Fitzpatrick.
Yes.
Representative Gillette.
Yep.
Oh. Why did she leave? I can't keep track of him either.
Oh, who are we on to?
Gillette.
Yes,
by proxy. Okay. Representative Hamilton.
Yes.
Representative Hastings.
Yes.
Representative Hellegaard.
Yes.
Representative Hopkins.
Yes.
Representative Keough.
Yes.
Representative Mercer.
Yes.
Representative Moore.
Yes.
Representative Knave.
Yes.
Representative Stewart Paraguay.
Yes.
Representative Reed.
Yes.
Representative Regeer.
Yes.
Representative Schillinger.
Yes.
Representative Tess.
Yes.
Representative Woodyboy.
No.
Chair Jones.
Yes. Motion passes. Okay, so action is delayed. Representative Beattie.
Jones, I move that House Bill 36 be taken from the table and considered by the committee today.
You've heard the motion of Representative Beattie. You want to explain briefly your motion?
Yes, Chairman Jones, members of the committee. In mid-January, one of our early actions was to table House Bill 36, which was a Legislative Finance Committee committee bill that addresses so-called significant enrollment increases and modified the formula by which that districts receive funding for those significant increases. I have perhaps additional information and better information upon which the committee might make a decision, and hence I would ask for this to be taken from the table so that we can consider it.
Okay. So are we okay with a voice vote, or we want a roll call vote this? What do we want to do? Voice vote. Okay, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposition? It comes off the table unanimous. Representative Beattie.
Let me start by passing a handout around, and then we can work off of that.
Probably should move the bill.
I'll do a due pass on House Bill 36.
Okay, it's been moved due pass on House Bill 36, and there is a handout coming around.
I guess it needs to go this way. Thank you. And if anyone needs a copy of the bill, I have a few extra copies of that. Chairman Jones, shall I speak to the bill?
Please speak to this bill, sir.
I'll wait until everyone has a copy of this document in their hand. Apparently we do. All right, so House Bill 36 is as I said earlier, looks to change current law in terms of how additional funding is provided to school districts for significant enrollment increases, whether anticipated or unanticipated. What I've tried to do here is, and what I did not make clear when this bill was presented, was that I wanted to differentiate House Bill 36 from what current law is, understanding that current law will stay in effect if we take no action on 36. So the top little table I have there is more or less a description of the bill and how it works from a fiscal standpoint. So one thing that House Bill 36 proposes is it has a gate or a threshold that must be met in order to even be eligible for such funding. This is set at 110% enrollment, 100% greater over a three-year period, which is a CAGR of just over 3% per year. Now, both current law and House Bill 36 have then a so-called absorption factor in it, which is based upon the notion that a school district should be able to absorb a certain number of students into their classrooms and continue to operate without without significant increase in cost during that year. Understand that in either case, those additional students will be counted for A and B in that year, and funding will be provided in the subsequent year. School funding always lags 1 year based upon our funding formula. Now, you'll notice the absorption factor under current law, which is the lesser of 40 or enrollment or 4% of the district's budget limit A and B. That is to say, A and B is a proxy for enrollment. It leads to a place where larger school districts almost always are in the hit the 40 threshold, the 4% being larger. And so this is the current formula is skewed pretty heavily towards larger districts. Now, what does a district receive for the additional enrollment during that year? Under House Bill 36, it's 80% of the per A and B entitlement. Whereas in the current law, there are two cases in current law, either anticipated, in which case a district senses that it's going to have larger enrollment in the coming school year. If they do that, they can actually include that larger enrollment in their budget. They'll receive full direct state aid, that's what DSA means, and also receive funding through a permissive levy, which is part of the funding formula as well. If it's unanticipated enrollment, that is to say, takes place in October, and it meets the threshold as described for the current law, then it will be entitled to a direct state aid payment, but no permissive levy. Another factor that differentiates House Bill 36 from current law is not quantified reduction in administrative costs for school districts. Under current law, districts must apply. This leads to some interesting things that happen as districts change business managers. Sometimes they forget to apply, sometimes they decide not to apply, whatever. But the fact is that they have to go through a process of applying, and this may be a negligible cost to a district, but generally speaking, putting administrative burdens is something on school districts or other entities is generally something that we frown upon. House Bill 36 is different in that it self-executes within the way our funding formula works right now and the way the counts are incorporated into it. So that's the difference between House Bill 36 and current law. Now, there's an impact in funding based upon using these two different methodologies. First, there's an impact on general fund expenditures. And so I have a case study here from 2014 through 2021 that illustrates the difference. If you see a delta that is a positive number, that means House Bill 36 would have cost more in that particular year. If you see a negative number in parens for a delta, that means that the current law is more costly. And you'll see a good deal of fluctuation. That's because enrollment fluctuations take place, and just the mechanics of how current law is done creates some of these fluctuations.
2021 is an interesting data point, as you can see, because it's quite anomalous. We saw a reduction between 2020 and 2021 in what current law would have done, whereas we see a great increase in House Bill 36. This is, it's difficult from the data that OPI has now to tease out what is causing that that particular anomaly that you see in the data. But you can see there's quite a bit of variability throughout this data set, and it's largely driven by enrollment changes. But if you look over the 2014 to 2021, even keeping that anomalous case in place, you'll see that on average, execution of House Bill 36 been executed over that time period, it would have on average cost the state $85,000 a year more for a program that is arguably easier on districts. One thing that is clear, though, if you look at the difference in local property taxes, House Bill 36 has no provision for permissive levies to be run, and so there, in every year, there is a would have been, had House Bill 36 been in effect, savings to district house to taxpayers across the state of on average $620,000. So that is a definite and unambiguous plus to this bill, if you believe that. That taking some property tax burden off of local citizens is a good thing. And with that, I'll close with my opening.
Okay, and I'll just summarize real quick, because so basically there is an unanticipated enrollment law that exists today, anticipated and unanticipated. It exists in law. We've tweaked it over the years because of the Balkan and because of other items. So if you have these surprise enrollments that show up, some can be anticipated. You look ahead and say, wow, there's a man camp moving in, and they anticipate it and they estimate it. Others folks just show up. Beyond a certain number today, the law allows for the A and B monies to adjust, the state to adjust, and as a current law exists, not only does it impact the state, it allows some permissive levying as well to offset. It has both a state impact and a local impact. It's fairly complicated between unanticipated, anticipated, etc. There has been discussion by folks such as from OPI making this more straightforward, which is what House Bill 36 attempts to do. House Bill 36 also transfers more of the impact of the enrollment delta in the first year. In the end, the locals always pay their share. But in the first year, it says if there's an unanticipated enrollment change, that the state will basically pay for that change. There is no ability for the locals to adjust in that first year. So either way, I think there was some misperception in the first one. This was adding a new unanticipated enrollment. No, that exists. That exists today. This was modifying how it happened, trying to simplify it, and trying to recognize that there would be no local impact, which is why you see the zeros for the local guys in the first year. Now, that doesn't mean the locals, when the formula changes so it becomes permanent enrollment, assuming the unanticipated folks stay, that locals aren't going to pay it. But it stopped that share. Part of the reason for doing this is there was some gaming going on. Folks would look ahead, once some of the clerks would look out there ahead, and they would anticipate a mass increase, whether it was there or not, and because they were always better off to be covered, then they would end up trying to reimburse. So there was some efforts to correct it. But the thought process last time that there wasn't one is not true. The unanticipated, whether as we discuss this bill, it's not as if it's adding a new change to it. It's modifying how an existing program works. With that, Representative Nave. Representative Wendy Boyd.
So in a nutshell, Mr. Chairman, I have a question for the sponsor. So
Representative Beattie,
what I'm seeing here is that going from 2014, 2015, all of those dates there, these are just side by sides of what could have been if this was in place. Am I correct?
Correct.
Okay. Makes sense. I'm for it.
Additional discussion, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do find favor in the bill, but would have one question for the sponsor, Representative Beattie. Technical notes. I remember this came up when the bill first came through. Number one, about the count occurs in October. It says the enrollment count will not be accepted after December 31st, but the calculations will be based on December 1st. Is there an effort to fix that?
Chairman Jones, Representative Hamilton, when I discussed this with OPI's fiscal note drafter, he put this technical note in there strictly to remind OPI that they had to make this particular calculation. It's not really a defect in the bill, because I asked him point blank, is there anything that needs to be done in the bill in order to address that technical note? And his answer was no.
Follow-up. It does say in the last sentence there that either the administrative rule needs to be adjusted or the bill proposal could be modified. So I suppose either way.
Chairman Jones, you're right. And I think that the notice report to self on that one for OPI was they needed to address their rules in order to get the count down correctly.
Thank you.
Additional discussion. Okay, in that case, let's just roll call vote.
Vice Chair Keenan?
No.
Representative Beattie?
Yes.
Representative Binkley?
Yes.
Vice Chair Cafaro?
Yes.
Representative Kirk Carpenter?
Yes.
Representative Falk?
No by proxy.
Representative Fitzpatrick?
Yes.
Representative Gillette?
That's you.
No by proxy.
Representative Hamilton?
Yes.
Representative Hastings?
No.
Representative Hillegard?
No.
Representative Hopkins?
Yes.
Representative Keough?
Yes.
Representative Mercer?
Nope.
Representative Moore?
Yes.
Representative Nave?
No.
Representative Stewart-Paraguay?
Yes.
Representative Reed?
No.
Representative Regeer?
No by proxy.
Representative Schillinger?
No.
Representative Tuss?
Yes.
Representative Windy Boy?
Yep.
Chair Jones?
Yes. Bill passes 1310. That's all right.
Yes.
Okay, again, that represents all of our action. We are likely back in after the floor today. Clint, I believe we feel we have... So we're, and you're seeing a couple bill possible drop, correct?
Mr. Chair, there are two bills on your board this afternoon for potential re-referral if they pass.
So we'll come in and work on those bills today. And a reminder, we are back on March 9th at 8 o'clock. Not March 10th, March 9th. Appropriations is in a day early. So remember, Representative Schillinger.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'm just curious why we're coming back on the 9th. It's when it was announced here a while back that we weren't going to have floor until the 10th, and so we're made to not come back till then.
That's one of the costs of being on appropriations. The we tried to have, at the request of Representative Mercer and others, they wanted a longer period of time to do House Bill 2 in the committee. And so that gives us 4 days. So in order to have our work done on House Bill 2, we often have to come back a day earlier.
We don't have Saturday.
Well, we are not scheduled for a Saturday, but we indeed, as appropriations, may work that Saturday as well. But right now, we're working March 9th, March 10th, scheduled March 11th and March 12th, and hopefully, March 9th, March 10th, March 13th, and March 14th are scheduled in here to get House Bill 2 done, and hopefully it will be out on the 14th. If not, it has to be out on the 15th or we'll miss our deadlines. And so we're simply providing sufficient time. Two of the sections, and Quinn, do you remember which two, will be that Thursday? I believe it's B. And sections B will be in the morning of Thursday, starting at 8 a.m. Section D will be in the afternoon upon the completion of Section B. Friday morning will begin with Section E, and then that afternoon of the 10th will be C. The morning of the 13th will be Section A, and then we have executive action scheduled on House Bill 2 the afternoon of the 13th and on all day on the 14th until we get House Bill 2 complete. So that's currently.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, we are adjourned. Representative Mercer.
Just a quick question on that schedule. Can we really get B done in a morning?
Sure.
Well, it's we may be here a little late at night on D, but I mean that's the schedule, right? So it's scheduled to begin in the morning, and you're scheduled to be done before midnight. So somewhere between 8 and midnight, I'm hoping to get the two of them done. B is big, and E is big, so we try to get them off of the big spenders. We try to not have them on the same day. Section A is gone, so I had to move it to off of Thursday because Representative Moore is gone. Originally, we had A and D switch spots. And then, so,
well,
unfortunately, folks reschedule their sections around all the time.
As long as we have some flexibility to lop over into the next day, because I don't, as we sit here now, I don't think we have any idea how many questions people may have for B, and I have trouble thinking we could do B and D and get them all done in one day.
So again, that's why we have those extra a day and a half on the end for EA. One will follow the other. We're going to try to do B followed by D, followed by E, followed by A, followed by C across the days. And my statement earlier, we may be working Saturday. Could be that one of them rolls onto that Saturday.
And what about F?
F comes in on its normal schedule. It comes in
just
as
on the bills themselves. Yeah, there'll be no F presentation except
on the bills itself. We'll hear those bills, right? So F will do its presentation on the bills themselves.
So I want to email.
Okay, and yes, we are adjourned. So you can.
Okay. It's a long story how that happened. I ended up going to